Hello and welcome to The Epic Echo, a podcast created to reflect the voices of our community. This podcast is brought to you by the Eastern Panhandle Empowerment Center in West Virginia, and I'm your host, Nora Frazier. Hello and welcome back to another episode of The Epic Echo. January is National Stalking Awareness Month, and as a community, we owe it to survivors of stalking to raise awareness of the issues that they face. Today, I'm sitting down with Rebecca Hall, a victim advocate at the Jefferson County Prosecuting Attorney's Office. A victim advocate's job is to support and advocate for the needs of survivors in our community. So I couldn't have chosen a better person to interview for our episode this month. So Rebecca, if you don't mind, tell me a little bit about yourself and even your role as a victim advocate.
Thanks, Nora. It's nice to be here. So I am a victim advocate in the Prosecuting Attorney's Office. I've been here about 4 years now. And so my role is to work with victims of crime, and that can be any kind of crime from a petty larceny to stalking to murder. So we really have a wide variety of cases that we try to assist our victims in. And we work closely with the prosecuting attorneys as kind of a liaison between the victims and the prosecutors. We go to court with victims, keep them up to date on their cases, advocate for their wishes to the prosecuting attorney, and make referrals to community resources for those victims as well.
Before we dive too far into stalking, I wonder if you wouldn't mind telling us a little bit about what made you become a victim advocate, what kind of pushed you in that direction to start with?
Sure. So I've been a social worker here in Jefferson County for about 20 years. I used to work in child welfare, in and out of the court system for child welfare. And so it was an easy transition into the criminal justice system. You know, there's definitely a need for someone to walk these victims through the criminal justice system. They often have no idea the process, and you know, it can be very frustrating for victims. And so I think there's definitely a need to have someone there to walk with them through that. So I really enjoy my job. I think it's something that's very necessary and hopefully helpful to those victims.
Yeah, and we as EPIC are one of those community supports that you were mentioning earlier. We also work alongside victims, although a much more narrow section of the victims that you work with. We kind of go hand in hand as well with those advocating for the interpersonal violence victims. And I wonder if you would tell us what the most challenging part of your role as an advocate is. Specifically, you know, if there's anything that got more difficult as you transitioned from child welfare into being a victim advocate, just really anything that you're willing to share with us.
Sure, absolutely, Nora. And, you know, we're so grateful to have advocates from EPIC involved in our cases, because there's such a great need for victims of domestic violence and sexual assault. They need extra support, having been so traumatized through their crime, and then to have to go through the criminal justice system. It's really nice to have not just a prosecuting attorney victim advocate, but also a domestic violence and sexual assault advocate as well. But I think one of the most challenging things in my role as an advocate is that the criminal justice system isn't set up for victims. And so it can be a very challenging, frustrating process for our victims. Nothing moves quickly through the criminal justice system. And it's just, you know, we do have a Crime Victims Bill of Rights, but even with that, it's very difficult. It's not set up to make the victim comfortable. And so it's hard sometimes to help them walk through such a challenging criminal justice system. The other thing I would say is our lack of resources in our county, our state, our region. I'm sure you guys at EPIC feel that too, from transportation to housing to food. There's just really a lack of resources for people who are really in need. You know, when someone's gone through a terrible crime like this, you know, sometimes they've lost their housing, their income, you know, and a lot of them are starting over, and it can be very, very challenging. There's not a lot of resources out there. And so that would probably be one of the other most challenging parts of our job.
Yeah, and I know all of our advocates here would absolutely agree. Those are two very, very large components of some of the issues that we face as well. As far as, you know, the non-victim-centered court system, it can be very hard to navigate, difficult to understand, all those things that you just said, which is another reason we're so fortunate to have this close connection with all of the victim advocates around the county and be able to kind of pull all of the resources that we do have available. It makes it a lot easier and a lot better situation for the victims than they would be in without all of the victim advocates, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
As I said at the beginning of the episode, January was National Stalking Awareness Month. For our listeners who may not already know, could you tell us what exactly stalking is as far as the definition goes?
Sure, absolutely. So stalking is really just a pattern of behavior that's directed at a specific person that would cause that a reasonable person to fear for that for your safety or the safety of others, and also they may suffer substantial emotional distress. So it's a very specific set of behaviors targeted towards a person that makes them fear for their safety.
Absolutely. And we know, or most of us know, especially in the world that we live in, we know that victims of stalking face a heightened level of fear, depression, they can lose work due to their victimization. In some cases, they can be pushed to move locations altogether. And I know that you have a very unique lens to view these victimizations through, through your office, through your work. So can you tell us about some of the unique challenges that you see stalking victims face as in your role as a victim advocate that we might not see or that the community itself may not see?
Sure, sure. So, you know, and I kind of touched on this earlier with just a challenge in general, but I think more specifically for victims of stalking, because the criminal justice system moves so slowly, sometimes there's, you know, for a charge, a criminal charge, there may not be a hearing for weeks, if not months, for a hearing on a charge. And then if the case goes to trial, the trial may not be for a year. And in the process, in all of that time, this victim is having to the, you know, that she could have the defendant can be out in the community, is out working, and which of course would cause the victim of that crime to be fearful for their safety. And so I think it's very challenging for us to remember that when it's moving so slowly that somebody's out there having to live their day-to-day life while waiting for the criminal justice system to kind of move to catch up with what where they're at with things. It can seem unfair. The punishment for stalking can seem unfair to the victim. I think sometimes in the criminal justice system, our magistrates, our attorneys, even prosecutors, you know, sometimes there's that lack of education maybe that we need to do more community outreach for, not understanding it's a newer crime. And so understanding what it is, the dangerousness of it, I think that's kind of challenging to make sure that you know, we're educating and reaching all of those people so that they understand how our victims feel going through the process and just the dangerousness of it.
Yeah, I think that's a piece of being a victim advocate that a lot of folks in the community may not really think about is the aspect of not only are we advocating for them on a very personal level on a day-to-day basis, but also on like a larger legislative scale. There's a lot of advocating that goes on behind the scenes in the court systems, in our legislative systems. There's kind of another higher level of advocacy that a lot of people may not see.
Right, right. Yeah, within our community, so it's our personal advocacy for that individual victim, just in our community, you know, we can do a lot better job of educating attorneys and magistrates. And then, like you said, as well as with the legislature who's creating all the laws that we're having to navigate through.
Yeah, absolutely. And you were telling us a little bit about the timeline and how that can be very difficult. It's kind of you can't really see where the end is going to come for a lot of these cases. They just kind of seem like they can go on forever, especially to the victims. And I'm pretty sure we all know the answer to this, but I do still think it's worth asking how the COVID-19 virus has impacted that timeline. I'm sure that that's made it a lot more difficult.
Absolutely. And it's gotten a little bit better since, the 2020, where we had some shutdowns and things like that. And last year, things were a little bit better. But with every outbreak with like Omicron, we had lots of outbreaks in the court system. And so hearings got continued, trials got continued. All it takes is one attorney or the defendant, one person in that circle to have contract COVID, and then the whole case can be delayed for another couple of months. And so it definitely has made it more challenging when we already have very, very difficult timelines for the criminal justice system.
Right. Yeah. And that can be very frustrating, especially from the victim's perspective, because, I mean, as we all know, although these, they're taking more time with having the delays to get to trial, to actually get time in the courtroom, there's still crime that's continuing to happen. So it's not like, we can just actually put everything on pause. It's just kind of cases are piling on top of cases.
Right. And like I said, I always try to remember that, a continuance, while it's inconvenient for some, these victims are still living out there every day in fear. And so they have to still go to work. They still have to go to school and take care of kids and things like that while their case is just, ongoing. And it can be very frustrating, especially if, they're living in fear while we're still waiting for the criminal justice system to kind of catch up.
Yeah, absolutely. So national statistics tell us that stalking is most common in young women ages 18 to 14. And I was wondering if this data matches with what we see here in Jefferson County through your perspective there.
Yeah, and I didn't, Nora, I looked back over our cases, and that really does fit for stalking. Our victims are in that age range, and that a lot of them are college students or young adults. I did kind of think about that a little bit, and I wonder if some of that could be because our older population may not be as educated or up to date on what stalking behavior is, or that there's even laws that make that a crime. And there again, I think that's where with community education and outreach, maybe we could reach those older populations. I think that it might be hard to believe that it's not occurring at all in older populations. And we have some, but I think that the numbers might be closer if our older population really understood what stalking is and that there are laws against that now.
Yeah, I absolutely couldn't agree with you more. I mean, even in pop culture, obviously that's consumed more by a younger audience than by an older audience. I think that we are seeing a lot more conversations about stalking. There are TV shows. We just hosted a discussion series on the Netflix series You with some Sheppard University students 2 weeks ago, I think it was. So there is a lot more space for these conversations, I think, to be had in younger audiences. And I think you're absolutely right in speculating that.
Yeah.
So you kind of just mentioned one with maybe a lack of education around stalking in older folks, but are there any other trends that you've seen that you would like to talk about here today in our community?
Well, and I think, Nora, with the pandemic ongoing, and now we're going on, I think, year three, getting ready to enter year three of the pandemic, we've seen a fairly large increase of domestic violence in general. And I think, we thought back about what might have led to that. And with pandemic and shutdown and more people staying at home, financial stressors, the economy and things like that, it may be leading to an increase of domestic violence. So that's something we've seen here in our criminal court system, is an increase of that interpersonal relationship violence, domestic violence, child abuse. But you know, there may be some real link to the pandemic and the stressors that that's caused and the increase in those kinds of cases.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think as we begin, or as we continue to collect more data, and once we're able to eventually look back at this time with a different lens, I think that we are going to see that those increases, I mean, I think that they correlate even as far as with the newer outbreaks and the newer variants. It's just been very unique to see through our line of work. So I look forward to eventually having the data to be able to translate that and help our communities better understand what we are seeing. And I did want to mention, since you brought up the increase of interpersonal violence, for our audience members that may not know in the community, intimate partner stalking is the most common form of stalking that we see. Which intimate partner stalking is just stalking within a relationship that happens. It can happen before, during, or after the relationship, but it is the most common form. So when we do see an increase in things like domestic violence, there's typically going to also be an increase in the other forms of interpersonal violence, like stalking as well.
Absolutely.
All right. Yeah, I just want to kind of give you a little bit of space here to talk to the community. We went through the trends. We've kind of gone through the impact of COVID. Is there anything else that you would like to speak about before we kind of close things up here for the day?
I think we've kind of touched on a little bit, Nor, but just, you know, trying to reach out to the community for education about stalking on a community level. And most importantly, I feel like it's sometimes is really the legislative level, because they are making the laws that victims and all of us advocates are gonna be living in, and just making sure that they understand how dangerous it is and how it really affects our victims, you know, make those laws that protect our victims and give them the protection that they need and deserve.
Absolutely. I know that for any folks that are listening that also follow us on social media, we actually spent the entire week last week sharing some insight and some information on specifically the stalking code in West Virginia legislation. So if you haven't already, you can check out our social media pages at EPIC for a little bit more information about what's going on there. I know some of our advocates are actually going to be traveling to speak to some of the legislators very soon about the stalking bills. These things do impact our communities, even though sometimes, especially in times of, you know, crisis, especially during the past 2 years, it's kind of hard to imagine the bigger picture, like the bigger things like that legislation piece, but it's impacting our community every day in the ways that it sometimes doesn't hold up what it needs to for victims. Some victims are able to still fall through the cracks, and that's what we really want to prevent.
Absolutely, Nora. Yep.
And I always end the episode with the same question. It's a bit of a tricky one, but I do think that it's so important for our community to hear from the people that are kind of out here on the front lines. It comes with an action call to the community as well, because I think if we all know what a part we can play in these battles, then we can all make sure that we're striving to make our communities a little bit better. So what, in your own words, can we as a community do to help support survivors of stalking, those who pursue legal action through the court system, and also those who don't, in your own words?
So Nora, I would just say, you know, certainly any donations you could make to our local shelters, that's always, always a need that we see here in the criminal court system. When, like I was talking about earlier, our victims, sometimes when they begin a case with us, they really are starting over, starting with nothing. And so donations to our local shelters is very, very helpful. And other than that, I would just also ask that they, you know, educate themselves about stalking, recognize what it is, report it if they can, and to, you know, reach out to your local representatives in the state legislature to try to advocate for, you know, tougher laws and sentences for those victims of stalking crime.
And like I said, we are also trying to be a source of information for the community on what is happening in the legislative session and the way that it directly impacts the victims that we serve. I am so, so grateful to be able to sit down and talk with you today. I know Epic is so grateful for the continued support and our professional relationship that we have with all of the other victim advocates and the helping professionals in the community.
Thanks so much, Nora. We certainly appreciate all of your all's advocacy and help. I know our victims really appreciate it too. So it was great to be with you today.
Yeah, thank you so much. I believe as soon as the episode ends, I'm going to also include a little blurb of information that's going to be about an app called Safe Night, which is an app that you can go to and you can actually directly upload the funds that will cover a safe night in a hotel for any one of our victims that we see. So I'm going to include a blurb. Please feel free to check that app out. And if you can, please consider donating in honor of National Stalking Awareness Month. Thank you all for listening. According to the 2014 National Domestic Violence Counts Report, in a single day, over 10,000 requests for help from survivors of domestic violence go unmet nationwide. Of those unmet requests, 56% are for safe housing. Safe Night is a mobile service that alerts donors to opportunities to securely fund hotel rooms when shelters are full or unavailable. Agencies like Epic, with a process for placing clients in hotels, can use Safe Night to fund alternative safe shelter, ensuring better access to safe shelter for survivors and expanding the opportunities for donors to make a difference. Here's how it works. You, the donor, download the Safe Night app onto your mobile device and create a profile. The survivor in need contacts a domestic violence agency or hotline like us here at Epic. The case manager determines that a hotel is an appropriate placement and enters a request for hotel room funding. You, the donor, receive an alert or an opportunity to pay for a hotel room via a tax-deductible donation to the requesting agency. For more information, visit www.safenightapp.org or reach out to us here at Epic. Thank you, as always, for your support. Thanks for listening to another episode of The Epic Echo. Make sure to like, rate, and follow The Epic Echo wherever you're listening right now. To suggest topic ideas or future guests, please visit our website at epicwv.org/epic-echo.